Welcome to the podcast of the universe. Warning. Steve is on his bullshit again. Let's start the show.
Welcome back. I am Steve. My producer is Hats. Thank you for coming in this evening, Hats. I know it's a little later than usual, so I appreciate you coming in. This, of course, is Podcast of the Universe, and this evening, we have a tasty little topic. You've already clicked on the podcast, so you know what it's called. This is cannibalism. I was going to come up with a cute little name or maybe some kind of a pun. I thought, nah, cannibalism, exclamation mark, that'll do. So, with the exception of the Halloween episode, I try to keep the same intro song with the Queens of the Stone Age intro. So today I thought for the cannibalism episode, I would take a little snippet from Hammer Smashed Face by Cannibal Corpse. So if you have a highly trained ear, I didn't need to tell you that. So this episode is about cannibalism. We'll cover the different types, from cultural to deranged murder and eating of human flesh. It won't be super gross, but I mean, it's a gross topic. One that I'm okay with, but it might not be for everyone. So I guess that's your warning. But if you clicked on something called cannibalism and I made it, so you're probably on the same page. Next episode, I have a few ideas for the show, but it'll be something a little more maybe lighthearted, uplifting, maybe hopeful. I don't know. But the last few have been a little dark, so maybe a fun mystery where people aren't murdered. Maybe we'll look for that. Maybe next week we'll be murder-free. No promises. And of course, if you ever have any ideas for the show on topics, you can send those to the Twitter account. You can DM me at thisispotu. THISISPOTU. Now today is November the 8th, 2018, and I'm just sitting down enjoying my Moosehead small batch. I'm not a big Moosehead fan, but I do like their Sugar Bush Black Lager. And when that's done, and it'll be done soon, I'm going to move on to the Moroccan Brown Ale, which I haven't seen around these parts for about a year. So I'm looking forward to getting into that Spearhead Moroccan Brown. Now, I could be stuffy and say that we're going to discuss anthropophagy, but I'm only going to call it cannibalism. So cannibals have said that human meat tastes like pork, that it is sweet or very much like veal, but looks like beef. Now, a little later on in the show, we're going to meet this character named Armin Muse. Now, he was a famous German cannibal, and he ate approximately 44 pounds of a man. That man was willing to be eaten, but we'll touch on that later. He described human flesh as tasting like pork, but a little more bitter, stronger. Another character we'll meet later on in the show is Issei Sagawa. He was a Japanese cannibal who had killed and eaten a classmate in Paris. He described human flesh as being odorless and not gamey. Polynesian cannibals insist that it tastes a lot like pork, and they had given the name long pig to human flesh. Something I didn't know, I honestly never thought of it, but here's a piece of trivia you can pass on to your coworkers or your wife while she looks at you strangely after saying, "I told you I didn't want to know about that." The average human adult provides about 66 pounds of food. That's including fat, muscle, organs, and skin. As good as all this sounds, there are drawbacks from eating people. One of the drawbacks of eating human flesh is something called kuru. Now, kuru is an incurable, degenerative, and ultimately fatal condition similar to mad cow disease. But instead of contracting it by eating contaminated beef, you exclusively get it through eating human flesh. It is in the brain where most of the infectious proteins, they're called prions, can be found. The symptoms of kuru include tremors, hysterical laughter, slurred speech, and eventually being unable to move or swallow. The incubation period is typically between 10 and 13 years, but cases have reported 50 years or more after exposure. Most sufferers will die within a year following the onset of symptoms, though. Now, interestingly, in 2009, researchers announced they had identified a gene variant that offers some people immunity from Kuru. And that's typically found in villages ravaged by the disease. Scientists believe this variant is evidence of natural selection in action, as those naturally resistant to Kuru survived to pass their genes on to their children, while those without any immunity died. Now, the first form of cannibalism I'd like to discuss is survival cannibalism. Now, there are many famous cases of cannibalism that I didn't want to cover, one of them being the famous 1846 Donner Party expedition. Now, Last Podcast on the Left has done a great two-part series, I believe it was two parts, on the Donner Party, so you can check that out. There was, of course, the 1972 plane crash that was carrying the Uruguay rugby team. That plane had crashed in the Andes. While they were stuck in the mountains, they were forced to eat their relatives and teammates who didn't survive the plane crash. Something that I was more unaware of was the unprepared early settlers in North America. So during the winter of 1609 in Jamestown, USA, the settlers found themselves in what is now known as the starving time. They were forced to cannibalize corpses for survival, along with eating boots and rats, which is different than boots and cats. In 1884, there was a ship called the Mignonette, and my French is awful, so I'm probably butchering that. But they were sailing from England to Australia. Maybe it's not French. Mignonette. So they were sailing from England to Australia. I don't know if they were dropping prisoners off or what they were, the point of their expedition was, but it sank, leaving four men in a raft with a few can of turnips. So after 3 weeks at sea, three of the men decided that they would kill and eat the fourth man. That man's name was Richard Parker, who was a young man who had no family and was ill. Now, before the Mignonette had set sail, Edgar Allan Poe had wrote a short story in 1838 where a character, also named Richard Parker, is eaten by fellow stranded sailors after hunger sets in. In the 1930s, the Soviet Union had replaced individual farms with collective farms to try and increase food supply. When they did this, it resulted in farmers making next to nothing for their crops, and workers were actually prohibited from eating crops that they had pulled out of the fields themselves. This led to massive famine, with millions dying. The Ukraine had it the worst, and their famine was called the Holodomor, translating to hungry mass death. So 3 to 5 million people died during this time, and people had to start gangs for protection. Government posters were put up to remind people that eating one's children was barbaric. Approximately 2,500 people were arrested for cannibalism. It was so rampant. Now, this next type of cannibalism is called endocannibalism. Now, endocannibalism is the consumption of flesh of a person who is a member of the consumer's group. So the membership can be based on family, society, culture, tribe, any type of in-group. Endocannibalism is most often an expression of veneration of the dead, or the pursuit of consuming some esoteric aspect of the person, like the deceased's wisdom. Now, the four people, that's F-O-R-E, of Papua New Guinea, they practiced endocannibalism as part of funerary rites. In this tribe, women and children play the largest role in cannibalism among the deceased's four males. The society allowed certain relations to eat certain parts of the deceased. A woman, for example, ate the brain of her dead brother. The sister-in-law ate the hands of her husband's dead brother, or the buttocks. She would eat the vulva and intestines of her dead sister-in-law. In the Amazon, the Wari tribe practiced endocannibalism as a way to transform their ancestors' bodies into spirits. From there, the spirit could become an animal that would provide food for generations to come. Anthropologists saw this as a way for them to process their grief. By consuming the flesh of their loved ones, they believed, they changed their surroundings and rid themselves of painful memories. The Yanomi tribe, who live spread across 200 to 250 villages in the Amazon rainforest, they practice the traditional death ritual of endocannibalism. For the Yanomami, they practice endocannibalism because they do not believe that death is a natural occurrence of life. Instead, they believe that a rival tribe shaman sent an evil spirit directly to strike someone in the tribe. Therefore, to immediately resolve the issue of what should be done to remove the body, cremation ensues. The Yanomami view cremations as liberating in comparison with burials for their loved ones because decomposition would be a slow, tedious process. Consuming the ashes serves as a way to keep their beloved tribe member's spirit alive and well for generations to come. Prior to cremation, tribe members cover the body in leaves and put it in the forest that it is not too far away from the shaman or his hut. After allowing nature to take its course on the tribe member for about 30 to 45 days, they collect the bones and proceed to cremation. After cremation, the ashes are mixed together with a soup made from fermented bananas. Everyone in the community must consume the mixture. To accomplish this, gourds filled with the mixture are passed around among kin members, and consumption is usually finished in one sitting. However, an exception to finishing the consumption of ashes in one sitting is permitted in the case where enemies have killed Yanomami men. Rather than the entire community consuming the ashes, only the women must do it, and it has to happen on the night that a revenge raid is planned. The ashes of these men killed by enemies may linger around for years until the tribe believes that their death has been rightfully avenged. This is due to the Yanomami tribe's belief that the spirit cannot completely transition to the spiritual world without completely vanishing from the material world. Therefore, the ashes cannot be fully consumed until the matter of avenging the death is resolved so that the late loved one can make the peaceful transition to the spiritual world. Next, we have exocannibalism. Exocannibalism, as opposed to endocannibalism, is the consumption of flesh outside one's close social group, for example, eating one's enemy. Now, I'm not sure how popular this character is, or well-known he is. I was familiar with him through a Vice documentary. His name is General Buttnaked. Now, General Buttnaked was born Joshua Milton Blayee. For the rest of the story, I'll only refer to him as General Buttnaked, or GBN. If your name's General Buttnaked, I'm not going to call you your regular name. So, he was born in September 1971. He was a former commander under the Liberian warlord, Roosevelt Johnson. GBN was known for his violence and atrocities during the first Liberian Civil War in the early 1990s. During that time, he led the Butt-Naked Brigade, which had many child soldiers. And GBN states he originally was a tribal priest. He states that he was initiated as a tribal priest at age 11 and participated in his first human sacrifice. During the course of the three-day ritual that followed, GBN says that he had a vision in which he was told by the devil that he would become a great warrior and that he should continue to practice human sacrifice and cannibalism to increase his power. GBN led his troops naked, except for shoes and a gun. He believed that his nakedness was a source of protection from bullets. GBN claims he would regularly sacrifice a victim before battle, saying, usually it was a small child, someone whose fresh blood would satisfy the devil. Sometimes I would enter under the water where children were playing. I would dive under the water, grab one, carry him under, and break his neck. Sometimes I cause accidents, sometimes I just slaughter them. GBN confessed to taking part in human sacrifices, which included killing an innocent child, plucking out their heart, which was divided into pieces for him and others to eat. GBN claimed to a reporter that he met Satan regularly and talked to him, and that from age 11 to 25, he took part in monthly human sacrifices. In his account of a typical battle, General Buttnaked claimed, "So before leading my troops into battle, we would get drunk and drugged up, sacrifice a local teenager, drink the blood, then strip down to our shoes and go into battle wearing colorful wigs and carrying imaginary purses we'd looted from civilians. And we'd slaughter anyone we saw, chop their heads off, and use them as soccer balls. We were nude, fearless, drunk, yet strategic. We killed hundreds of people, so many I lost count. General Butt Naked believes that approximately from 1980 to 1996, he and his men were responsible for the deaths of more than 20,000 people. Nearing the end of the Civil War, he converted to Christianity, and he said, "I feel very bad, so bad." But he did insist that it was satanic powers that possessed him in the past, and he cannot be held responsible. He has expressed willingness to be tried for war crimes at The Hague, and currently has an NGO called Journeys Against Violence, which trains child soldiers and drug addicts how to farm and build things. So that's General Butt Naked. Now this next segment is religious cannibalism. So religious cannibalism, I thought I would do a larger section on the Aztecs. So the Aztecs' divine duty was to fill the insatiable appetites of their gods through human sacrifice. Usually the Aztecs used enemies whom they had defeated in a war as offerings. But there were only so many wars to be fought, and only so many enemies to capture. Basically, they needed more victims. The Aztecs had made a deal to use the neighboring city-state of Tlaxcala like a farm for humans. The two armies organized strategies to stage battles just to capture prisoners for human sacrifice. It was a mutual agreement by both sides. The losing army wouldn't cry or complain about their fate. They understood that this was part of their part of the bargain, and they would allow themselves to be led to their death. To the brave, becoming a human sacrifice to the gods was an honor. In fact, when the Spanish came and tried to free Aztec prisoners, some were furious that they had been robbed of the honor of a godly death. It wasn't just enemy soldiers who ended up under the ceremonial knife, though. Criminals and debtors were also sent to the altar in disgrace. Others signed up eagerly, wanting the honor of dying for their god. By tradition, whole groups of prostitutes willingly signed up to be sacrificed to the goddess of love. During a drought, some Aztecs resorted to selling their children into slavery for 400 ears of maize. If the children didn't work well, they could be sold again. And if a slave was sold twice, they could become a gift to the gods. And during the month of Toxcatl, one man was chosen for a special honor based on his looks. He needed smooth, slim skin, and long, straight hair. For the next year, this man would be treated like a god. He would be dressed up like the god, Tezcatlipoca. His skin would be painted black, and he would wear a flower crown, a seashell breastplate, and lots of jewelry. The man would be given 4 beautiful wives to do with as he pleased. He was only asked to walk through the town, playing a flute and smelling flowers, so the people could honor him. When 12 months had passed, he would walk up the stairs of the Great Pyramid, breaking his flutes as he climbed to the top. As an adoring crowd watched, a priest would help him lie down on a long altar made of stone. They'd rip his heart out of his body. Afterward, they would pick a new Tezcatlipoca and start all over again. Usually, a victim would be taken to the top of the Great Pyramid and laid down over a sacrificial stone. A priest would stand over him, holding a knife with a blade of volcanic glass. That blade would come down upon the victim's chest, break it open. The priest would tear out the still beating heart. The priest would hold the heart up high for all to see. Then he would dash it to pieces against the sacrificial stone. The lifeless body would be rolled down the steps of the pyramid, where butchers were waiting below to dismember the body piece by piece. The skull would be removed and placed on a rack along with the skulls of the other sacrificed dead. Then the flesh from the body would be cooked into meals and fed to the nobles. The bodies of the sacrificed were often baked with corn and shared among the priests for a feast. Other times enough was prepared for the whole city, and every person present would partake in a shared act of ritualistic cannibalism. The bones were then fashioned into tools, musical instruments, and weapons. At least one dish they used in these ceremonies still exists today, pozole. In the time of the Aztecs, this was a soup prepared with the thigh of a sacrificed prisoner and served to the emperor. Today, the dish is made with pork instead of human flesh, but the taste is pretty much the same. When the Christians forced the Aztecs to switch to pig meat, they reported it tastes just like human beings. One of the most disturbing Aztec festivals was called Tlaxcaxtlahuitzli. I know I butchered that, but it translates to the Festival of the Flaying of Men. This was a ceremony dedicated to the god Xipitotec, whose name meant the flayed one. 40 days before the festival, one man was granted the honor to dress like the flayed one. He was covered in red feathers and golden jewels. He spent 40 days honored as a god. Then on the day of the festival, he and 8 other impersonators of gods were brought to the top of the temples and killed. The priests skinned the bodies of the sacrificed men in an imitation of a plant shedding its husk. The skin was then dyed yellow to look like gold. Some skins were given to priests who danced in them. Other skins were given to young men who spent the next 20 days begging while draped in a loose coat of human flesh. So now I thought we would discuss some lesser-known cannibal killers. Maybe you're familiar with them, maybe not, but this is a brief snapshot. Now, I assume everyone's familiar with Jeffrey Dahmer, so I didn't want to spend any time on him for this. So the first one we mentioned at the top of the show, his name is Issei Sagawa. And Sagawa was born in 1949 in Japan to wealthy parents. In 1978, at the age of 28, he moved to Paris, where he planned to study. And on June 11th, 1981, he invited a fellow classmate, René Hartveld, over to his place for dinner. He had carefully selected her for her qualities, and had hoped that by killing and eating her, he would absorb her energy and replace his own inadequacies. Sagawa shot the Dutch-born Hartveld in the neck with a rifle. He then feasted on her body for 2 days. The French police caught him when he tried to dispose of what was left of her remains. Next up we meet José Luis Calva. He was born in Mexico in 1969 and has been accused of murder on 8 occasions. In 2007, Mexican law enforcement went to Calva's home because they wanted to question him about his missing girlfriend. Her name was Alejandra Galena. On entering Calva's home, they discovered him eating human meat seasoned with lemon. Calva tried to escape through a window, but the police captured him. A search found the mutilated body of his girlfriend, human flesh in the fridge, yet even more in a frying pan, and for some reason, human bones in cereal boxes. The police also found a book on cannibalism, a picture of Hannibal Lecter as portrayed by Sir Anthony Hopkins in the 1991 thriller Silence of the Lambs. Calva was charged with 2 murders. He was found guilty and sentenced to 84 years in prison. On December 11th, 2007, he was found hanging by his belt from the roof of his prison cell. Next, we discussed him also at the beginning of the show very briefly. That is the German-born Armin Muse. Now, Armin had placed an advertisement on a cannibal fetish blog. He stated that he was looking for a well-built 18 to 30-year-old to be slaughtered and then consumed. Now, bizarrely, the advertisement attracted a good response, but many backed out. One man did not. His name was Bernd Jürgen Armando Brandes. The two met on March 9th, 2001 at Muse's apartment. They had sex and then made a video of Muse amputating Brandes' penis and trying to eat it. Muse was forced to use a knife on the penis when biting it off failed. Brandes attempted to eat his raw penis, but he found it too chewy. Muse tried to cook the penis, but he burned it. Deciding it was too charred for consumption, he fed it to his dog. As Brandes lay bleeding, Muse fed him a cocktail of alcohol and drugs before finally stabbing him to death. Muse then stripped Brandes of flesh cut him into pieces, and froze his body, or the parts of his body, for consumption later. Muse consumed up to 44 pounds of that flesh over the next 10 months. He was arrested in 2002 and convicted of manslaughter in 2004. Later, a retrial was ordered in 2006. Muse was convicted of murder and sentenced to life imprisonment. Our next cannibal is Joachim Kroll. He was born in Germany in 1933. In 1955, Kroll killed his first victim, a 19-year-old named Irmgard Strell, after stabbing, disemboweling her, and leaving her body in a barn. He would go on to kill another 13 times. What Kroll would do would be surprise victims, then strangle them. Afterwards, dismember their bodies, keep pieces of them to eat later. Kroll would then go home and have intercourse with a sex doll. Now, to be honest, I didn't know they had sex dolls pre-1976. So, I guess I'm going to have to Google the history of sex dolls. Because I want to see, because I have to think that that looks real creepy. So I'm real curious to see what they look like. So, in 1976, the search for a missing girl led the police to Kroll's apartment. Inside, they found the remains of a 4-year-old, Marion Kettner. The police then found some body parts in the fridge and a small hand cooking in the pan of boiling water. He was arrested and claimed he ate his victims to save on food bills. He confessed to a total of 14 murders, but was only convicted of 8. And in 1982, he was given a life sentence. He died of a heart attack in prison in 1991. And next up, we have Andrei Chikatilo, who murdered and mutilated over 50 women and children in the Soviet Union from 1978 until 1990. After being arrested in 1990, he confessed to 34 murders, admitting that most of his victims suffered 30 to 50 stab wounds. He was often referred to as a cannibal by the media of the day. In 1992, he was found guilty of 52 murders and 5 counts of sexual assault, for which he was sentenced to death plus 86 years in prison. He was executed by gunshot on February 14th, 1994. Now, I'm okay that they executed him by gunshot, but I'm curious about sentencing him to death plus 86 years in prison. That part's a little more curious. Next, we have a woman, and her name is Leonarda Cianciulli. And she murdered 3 women in Italy from 1939 until 1940. She later turned her victims' bodies into soap and tea cakes, which she then served to her friends and ate herself as well. She reportedly killed the women as sacrifices in order to protect her son during World War II. She confessed to her crimes and was found guilty of murder in 1946. She was sentenced to 30 years in prison and died of cerebral apoplexy in 1970. And she wasn't the only woman, because we also have Catherine Knight. Catherine Knight of Australia murdered her partner, John Price, by stabbing him around 30 times, and that was in 2000. She then skinned him, decapitated him, and cooked parts of his body with a variety of vegetables, making a meal which she planned to serve to his children. His head was found in a pot of vegetables. She pled guilty, but took no responsibility and showed no remorse for her crimes. She was sentenced to life in prison in 2001 and currently serving out her sentence at the Silverwater Women's Correctional Center in New South Wales. And the last one is the American rapper Big Lurch. He was convicted of murdering his roommate, Tanisha Yasei, in 2002. The pair reportedly took PCP prior to the killing. Big Lurch cut open Yasai's chest and tore out her lungs. Multiple bite marks were found on her body, and human flesh was found in the rapper's stomach after the murder. Big Lurch was sentenced to life in prison and is currently serving time at Mule Creek State Prison in California. One of the things I did read about that case was, and I'm not excusing eating someone's lungs. He had been in a car accident years before and had a lot of pain issues and would use PCP as something to kill the pain and developed an addiction. I guess he's not the last one. If you're familiar with Jeremiah Johnson, so when I was a child, my father would always make me watch Jeremiah Johnson starring Robert Redford. And it's not a bad movie. It's just he watched it way too much. So when I was reading about cases of cannibalism, I came across a man, an American mountain man, who's known as Liver Eating Johnson. Now, they called him Liver Eating Johnson because there were other Johnsons. One of them was Long Toes Johnson, and the other guy, I forget what he was, but he was a Johnson. But he was known to have killed Native Americans eating their flesh to survive in the wilderness. Now, he seemed to be at odds with the Crow Native Americans, and he would eat their livers almost out of spite because they said that their belief structure was that the liver helped them get to the next spiritual plane. So he would defile their bodies and eat their liver. He had served in the army at one point and had many professions through his life. But that liver-eating Johnson is the same Jeremiah Johnson. So that's something I didn't know about that man. And from my memory, was not portrayed in the movie. So maybe a show on him is in the future. So I think that should do it for cannibal killers. So let's call it here. Now, I certainly have plenty more information on cannibals. Originally, the show was going to be an hour and a half, at least. But I thought that might be a little too long for cannibalism and graphics. So I'm going to hang on to some of my cannibalism material. And we'll visit that another day. This is more of a general episode on cannibalism. So, before I leave you, let me leave you with a few movie recommendations. The first one is Bone Tomahawk. Now, I watched this on Netflix. I don't know if it's still there or not. But you should watch this movie. It's good. It's really good. But it's really graphic, too. Netflix gave it a PG rating, which I was confused by. It was very graphic. Like, someone's literally split in two. And it basically shows all of it. But it's, I don't want to talk about it too much because it would give it away. But I highly recommend Bone Tomahawk, Ravenous. Ravenous is a movie with Guy Pearce where he's in an early American outpost as a soldier. And it's a fantastic movie. And I feel that not enough people have seen it. Cannibal Holocaust, of course. Cannibal Holocaust is a very well-shot horror movie for its time. The unfortunate part, I guess, would be watching all of the animal death. Like they dismember like a turtle, a monkey, some other things, and it's quite graphic. Cannibal the Musical, that was a fun time. So everyone knows about the Donner Party. But not everyone seems to be familiar with Alfred Packer. He was in the Western U.S. and he had eaten some people. And Matt Stone and Trey Parker of South Park, early in their career, made a movie called Cannibal the Musical. And it's pretty funny. And then, of course, your Soylent Green and Silence of the Lambs, Hills Have Eyes, Texas Chainsaw, all of those are well known. So those are a couple that I would recommend that you may not have seen. So I'm going to try to have a fun episode for the next show. Maybe some lighter subject matter. And like I said at the top of the show, I have a few ideas I'm kicking around. And I'm not going to commit to anything yet. So it is Thursday. I'm going to go to sleep, wake up, and get through my work day and enjoy the weekend. I hope you all do the same. Feel free to check out my other show if you're a fan of He-Man. And that show is POTU for MOTU. So that's at POTU for MOTU. And like I said earlier, if you have any ideas for the show or topics you'd like to hear me cover, just shoot me a DM. I'll put them in the list. And until next time, be the change that you want to see in the world. Good night.